Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the first Legacy Committee meeting of 2020. Nice to see you all. Seen you in different capacities, so it's nice to see you in here with Legacy. We have some new teammates here. I'd like to introduce my committee legislative assistant, Katie Hirsch, and I just warned her that we're going to ask her to say a few words. She didn't have to bring artwork of her favorite outdoor activities and all that sort of thing, but maybe Katie can introduce herself just briefly, unless you want to talk to her.
Hello, nice to meet you all. I'm Katie. I'll be the new committee legislative assistant for the Legacy Committee. I wasn't really asked a question, but in case you're wondering, my favorite part of the outdoors is swimming in the lakes or wherever. Thanks.
Thank you. So we're all teamed up. We're ready to go. We also have some new pages, and just wondering if you could stand up and introduce yourself, and thank you for your help and this committee, and you're a vital part of our team. So please introduce yourselves, and maybe if you would be willing to say, whether it's arts or parks and trails or something in the great outdoors of Minnesota that you enjoy. Try to stay in Minnesota. Thank you, Keenan.
I'm Elizabeth Gray, and one of my favorite things is camping and the trails at our state parks.
Thank you. Thank you both. And, we're so lucky here in the Minnesota House to have great employees and partners and teammates. And so thank you for your service to Minnesota. Has anybody have an opportunity to look at minutes? From our previous meetings, Representative Hausman?
I wasn't at one of them, so I probably shouldn't make
Okay. Sense. Representative Zhang, would you be willing to move? Do we move them together or separate? There's April 10th minutes and May 22nd. Would you be willing to move those? Thank you, Representative Zhang. Any questions in regards to that? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and we have approved minutes. Thank you very much. So the only bill we have on the agenda today is a big one. So please come up, Representative Becker Finn and the team from Lessard Sams. Much of what we do as a committee was, as you all know, was done last year. We're mostly a biennial committee, and so we moved a lot of things in the parks and trails area and the cultural heritage and the clean water. But the Lessard Sams is set up every year, and they've been busy, and so we'll hear about that. And so the Minnesota House is served by two members, Representative Becker Finn and Representative Fabian, and I guess there's some senators, but we don't usually acknowledge them for obvious reasons. I'll move that House File 3128 is before us today. And that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion in a bigger legacy effort later in session. So with that, Representative Becker Finn, thank you for coming, and please tell us your great story.
Yeah, well, first things first, Mr. Chair, I do have two amendments, so I think it would make sense to get the bill in shape before we start talking about it in depth.
Okay, so we have the two amendments. There's an A7 amendment. Representative Finn, would you be... Just tell us real quickly what the A7.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A7 amendment is pretty boring house research brought it to my attention. It's just cleaning up a couple things to make sure that we're clear with what we're doing in the bill.
Okay.
A true author's amendment.
Thank you. Any questions in regards to this amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? That A7 is adopted. So the A8, I'll move that the A8 is before us. And Representative Finn, would you like to tell us just kind of briefly about the A8, please?
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the A8 amendment addresses an issue that's been an ongoing discussion both in the Environment Policy and Finance Committees and somewhat now in the Outdoor Heritage Council and at the last hearing on this bill related to accessibility of our WMAs or wildlife management areas and other public lands. This amendment would direct the DNR working along with the Council on Disability to really do more than they have in the past to reach out to folks with disabilities who may want to participate in hunting and fishing and other recreational opportunities. It is a quick turnaround. We're directing them to focus on reducing the barriers to accessing WMAs, including opportunities for persons with disabilities to use motorized vehicles or other mobility aids, infrastructure improvements, and also just publicizing and communicating better with people with disabilities. And this would direct them to get those recommendations and draft language to us by January 15th of next year, because this is the sooner we can get this work done, I think the better. So that is the A8 amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Finn. Representative Green, I'm going to come to you in a second. He has a question. So members know, we are laying this bill over. So I was contacted before the meeting by Representative Fabian, who also serves on the committee with Representative Finn and has been passionate, as Representative Finn has, on these issues of accessibility. So hopefully we can continue to work on it before it finally leaves the Minnesota House and then goes to the Senate. But my intent is just to pass this today, or attach it rather, and then keep having discussions as we go forward. Representative Green.
My question wasn't necessarily to the bill. My question is, we're moving amendments and bills and approving minutes, and I don't know if we have a quorum.
Representative Green, we established a credit. Some members have come in the door and then left.
Okay.
No,
that's fine. Just thought I would ask, because there's not very many people here.
Right. Representative Green, we are a smaller committee, so the quorum's a little easier than, say, Ways and Means, you know, where you'd have to fill half the room. But some members have poke their head in and have other commitments, and then I wish people were sitting here like you are, sir, every second. And but
hey,
no, it's a compliment. So we have this the amendment before us. Any other further questions at this time? Representative Fabian, do you want to come up now or talk about it later? Now. Okay. I thought maybe we could have a more full discussion on this, because it's kind of a good thing that we're looking at this, myself, having served on the council and discussed it when I was a member with you, Representative Fabian, and I'm glad that we're continuing on this. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the author of the bill as well. This is an issue that I have been talking about for over a year, basically. I brought the issue forward because I think that the process that's in place is far too cumbersome for people who have disability and mobility issues. In order to be able to gain access, like most of us can, for somebody who has mobility issues and they have to have some sort of assist in a wheeled vehicle, motorized wheelchair, whatever, the process that they go through now is cumbersome, it's time-consuming, and quite frankly, I think it really discriminates. First thing you have to do is you have to get a permit application online. for a permit to shoot from a vehicle. And when you get that application, as I understand, you have to go and see your physician, and the physician has to fill out the form, and then you send it to DNR, and it makes some stops there. And I know from some personal experience that it can take a few weeks to have that happen. Then after you do that, once you determine where you want to access the WMA, which WMA you want to go on, you have to meet with the local wildlife manager to establish the parameters of a permit that they can issue. If you get that permit for that WMA, and then you decide that you want to go pheasant hunting in western Minnesota on a WMA, now according to the rules, you have to go to the wildlife manager there and get their permit to use some sort of motorized vehicle to give you access. So it takes away any spontaneity that you might have. So Representative Lilly, you had some issues with a wheelchair here some time ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to come up to Roseau and go walleye fishing with me in October and the wind is blowing 35 miles an hour, we're not going fishing. But maybe we can go out to the cabin by Grigla and go and hunt some grouse. And once we get to the WMA, if you're still in some sort of wheeled device, you're not coming along. So that spontaneity, I think, is important to try to work into this. I appreciate the language that's here. I don't think that it goes far enough. And quite frankly, as legislators, we need to be concerned about the disregard that the DNR has shown on this issue. I started talking to the DNR a year ago about this issue, and I have been assured for 12 months that they're going to bring some language to me. We could sit down together and come up with some ideas about how we can make it less cumbersome, more streamlined, and we can gain more access for more people who have disabilities and mobility issues. I've been assured many, many times that we're going to work on this. I've mentioned it at the Lessard Council. I've mentioned it in committee. Last year when I brought the amendment forward, I talked to Chair Hansen and asked him if we could get it onto his environment policy and finance bill as it moved there. I said, I recognize that this is not the correct language, and that when it gets to conference committee, it's going to be gone. And I'm okay with that, but I want to start the conversation. And in the meantime, leading up to that, I was told that, well, DNR can probably get us some language. Never got any language. So here we are in this legislative session, and this is an issue that all legislators should be concerned about when you have an initiative and an idea, and you're assured by an agency that you're going to work things out, and then you don't, and then mysteriously an amendment shows up in another legislator's office. As legislators, we should take that very seriously when an agency decides to do a backdoor on you, on something that you've worked on and you've given your word that you're willing to work on, and then that goes away. That takes an amazing amount of something to do that and put up a barrier of trust and mutual respect that this place needs to have as a foundation. And so, Mr. Chair, what I'm asking you today is that you table this amendment and you allow me and Representative Becker Finn and others in the Senate and other places who are interested in this to see if we can't come up with a solution this year rather than doing something like this. This is really an insult to the process and to the election certificates that each and every one of us hold. And with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I've committed to working with all of the groups involved in this, veterans, disabled groups, and so forth. And I would like to be able to continue that conversation with those people and see if we can't come and do with the right thing.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. We have some questions. We have someone from the DNR who wants to come up. So I'm open to giving this some time. It's actually a very serious issue, and I know Becker Finn comes from this purely. She has, you know, friends and relatives that are just like you do, Representative Fabian, and and myself, I, you know, learned more than I thought I ever would. But I think all of us would be well served by having discussion. I don't know if she's open to waiting since we're not necessarily passing this bill, but I'm happy to have the discussion today here and now if you want to, because I think it's important. But do you just have a quick comment, Representative Becker-Finn?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, I want to acknowledge Representative Fabian's frustration, and you know, it's not a great situation for any of us when we feel left out of a conversation. And you know, I know when I talked to agency staff, this was language that the Minnesota State Council on Disability is excited about. You know, the DNR had signed off on it, and it was my understanding in my conversations that Representative Fabian would be part of that discussion. I do think it's important that we move this language today. It's good language. The Council on Disability, I believe they might even be here today. I know they were looking forward to being included and having this be out there. I also think this language actually goes further than the language that it's replacing and would apply to all kinds of natural resource-based recreational opportunities. I do think that, you know, I'm certainly open to further discussion, but I think this is much better placeholder language, and would be, to be honest, I would be absolutely fine with this language as it is. I also think we haven't actually had a full discussion of this issue in the Environment Policy Committee, which is, I think, a better venue for a full discussion of this issue. And, you know, I'm vice chair of that committee and can certainly do what I can to make sure that we do have that full discussion there, of which both Representative Fabian and I are members of the Environment Policy Committee, and then I think he would actually be able to more fully participate in that discussion that he should be part of as a member of that committee. So that would be what I would like to see today is that we do move this amendment that's before the committee, get this amendment on, and not slow up moving this bill forward, because I absolutely do not want this Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriation to get held up too long as we move closer to May. I think it's important that we get this done, and I don't want this to be something that's some kind of bargaining chip later on. And it's important work that the projects are ready to go, and we want to see this moving.
Thank you, Representative. I'm inclined to agree with that. I think it would be, you know, I'm looking around the table and realizing that, you know, some of the folks around the table might not be familiar with the discussion. It's a little bit sprung on us. You know, we were going to have a discussion on the full bill and then a clean water discussion. But I'm not against having the discussion here, but, you know, certainly the Environment Committee, and I definitely don't want to slow up the bill and final passage of the whole package. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments after the amendment author made some. With all due respect, this amendment admires the issue for a year. We have a solution in place in Representative Fabian's language that works right now. This isn't something that happened in the night. This is something that happened over a course of many, many, many discussions, as Representative Fabian was just laying out for everyone here today. For us to strip this and throw in a delay does nothing for the people that we're trying to help. And so, Mr. Chair, I think that I would speak towards the idea that we would have a conversation about this you know, in a broader sense, and this amendment should not be being included today for today's discussion.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman. Representative Hausman, and I was going to have the Deputy Commissioner, whatever your exact title, Mr. Myers.
That's simply what I was going to request.
Okay. Representative Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll also say we've yet to actually hear from the people impacted by this issue. I don't know that we've ever taken testimony from the community that's directly impacted. And so I think that you know, the State Council of Disability is on board with this, and this does do more than admire the problem. It's actually going to the community and asking for feedback from them about what they want to see instead of us assuming what it is that they want to see.
Mr. Myers.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Let me first of all just clarify that creating opportunity for people with disabilities within the outdoor recreation system is a huge priority for the Department of Natural Resources and for Governor Walz. The Governor Walz bonding bill, as you may know, and Representative Murphy has graciously given us time to talk about, has $10 million for creating our first completely disabled accessible state park. William O'Brien State Park will be the first park that a person with a disability can go in and experience one end to the other, hiking, trails, getting around the park, enjoying a picnic, camping, whatever you want to do. So those types of things are very important, and we work closely with the Council on Disability within our park system and other areas of the Outdoor Recreation Act to do those things and try to figure out where those barriers are and remove them. The language that was added to the bill last week does a lot more than allow a person with disabilities access. It would allow a highway licensed motor vehicle, or in this case perhaps a pickup truck, SUV, to drive into a wildlife management area if that person had a handicap placard. Now that may be right for some of these types of areas. If it was in the state forest system, certainly I've helped many disabled people find bear hunting access sites, get into forests to go hunting. But a lot of these wildlife management areas are very vast. There are considerable wetland issues in there, wetland areas. And many of them have barriers, stone barriers, so people can't drive a motor vehicle in there. So that was one of the concerns we had with this language last year. Trying to come up with a solution, I've talked with Representative Finn. I have talked with Representative Fabian. I sent Representative Fabian the language probably 3 or 4 days ago to get his input. So it did not just mysteriously appear. The department doesn't work that way. We work across the aisle with both parties to make sure your concerns and the concerns of your constituents are adequately represented. Just to, as a matter of record, I spoke with Representative Fabian last night and also Representative Finn about the concerns on the amendment. So there was nothing done in the dark of night with this amendment. It's been open, and I've been seeking Representative Fabian's input since conception. We also want to have some pilot projects this year. We're working, I've been working with the Division of Fish and Wildlife on how to put those pilot projects together, where they should be and what they should look like. So when this bill comes back up, we will work with the author and Representative Fabian to make sure that those pilot projects provide us information to learn as we develop these opportunities and also add value. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for you, Commissioner. What do you mean by anyone with a placard?
The amendment language requires that a person with disability must require, if you look at 26.10 to 26.12, a valid disability parking certificate authorized under section 169.35 or valid license plate issued under 168.021, so a handicap tag. I think some of these people who want to do this may have to have somebody drive them there. They may not have that placard. So that's one of the barriers with the language in existence right now. So the language that was amended into the bill last week keys everything off of a handicap parking tag.
Representative Heitzman.
And that's what my comments are referring to.
Thanks for clarification.
Thank you. So committee, I'm inclined to move forward with this at this time, and I'm certainly hopeful that and expecting that we have further discussion. We are laying this bill over, and if it does find time in the Environment Committee, I think it all of us maybe should attend to see and hear the discussion. We all have people in our communities that should have access or be able to have access to this public lands that are, you know, that this money is buying, and so it's a good discussion. At the same time, you don't want to have the Wild West either, where, you know, it's ATV park or not. That's not a good example, but even bike riders make bad choices just whoever would make bad choices and wreck restored habitat, I guess is my comment. So
I'd ask for a roll call, Mr. Chair.
A roll call has been requested, and we'll get a roll call. So Katie, any discussion before we go to the roll call? Seeing none, we'll have a roll call on the A8 amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Lilly?
I'm sorry, we have one more hand in the crowd, and I just out of respect, please come up quick and then.
Thank you very much.
Yep, sorry, I didn't see you there. That's
right.
On me.
I just wanted to make.
Please state your name and then.
Mark Hughes, and I'm a 12-year member of the Minnesota State Council on Disability. And I think the person you want to, if you want more reference on it, or them to come and testify in your committee would be Margaret Invec Cross, because I know she was working on this issue a couple, 3 years ago.
Yep.
And you can contact the State Council on Disabilities and get her information. But I think in all fairness, there really should have been somebody here from the State Council on Disability today, and I don't know that there is to hear their case in point.
I think we do have. Thank you, sir, for coming forward, and yep. I think we do have someone from the
I just want to be sure
the audience.
I want to be sure they heard. Cody, I didn't know you're here. Thank you.
Please come forward and state your name for the record, and go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Cody Olson. I am the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Disability, and I'm here today to state that we have a great working relationship with the Department of Natural Resources and are happy to serve as a technical advisor and consultation in reference to this bill. This is an issue that we believe that the disability community really should have lots of input on, and we believe that our agency is suited to convene the stakeholders together and really dive deep into this issue. And so we are happy to serve that role. And Margo actually just retired yesterday, so I am the new Margo, so I am here to serve in that role.
Well, thank you very much for coming forward, and it sounds like you will be a party to the discussion as we go forward. And with that, I'll renew my motion. The amendment is before us, and the clerk will take the roll on the amendment.
Chair Lilly.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wazlowick.
Aye.
Representative Heintzman.
No.
Representative Bow.
At this time, no.
Representative Green.
No.
Representative Hausman.
Yes.
Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Representative Erdahl.
No.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes.
And Representative Zhang.
With that, the amendment is passed, 6-4. So thank you for the discussion, and I really do seriously expect that it's not an over discussion. Thank you, Representative Fabian. I don't know if you're still here, but for expressing your passion, and there's passion on both sides of this, and moving forward with a good solution. Representative Finn, we have your amended bill before us, and go ahead when you're ready. Tell us a great story of what the Lessard-Sams Committee has been working on for the last 12 months.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is the annual Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriation. We spent a lot of time and a lot of hours going through hundreds of projects that came forward all across the state. And so I'm actually going to let my team do some talking here. We also have the chair of the Outdoor Heritage Council, David Hartwell, is here today. Thank him for making time to be here. And he has to be somewhere else. So I'm going to let him go first. And I will be here as long as you need me to be. So,
Mr. Hartwell, please state your name for the record. And go ahead. Great. When you're ready, sir.
I'm David Hartwell, chair of the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. Chair and members, thank you for letting me be here today. I'm happy to see the bill before you for discussion. The bill has about $135 million worth of projects to restore, enhance, and protect habitat in Minnesota. It comes to you with the unanimous support of the council. And a long process, as Representative Becker-Finn was describing. We put out a request for proposal in the winter, spring of the year. We get all those proposals, which amounts to a 4-inch thick binder of proposals. Each member reads and scores those. The council then gets together and decides which of those scored proposals to bring into a hearing. This is just the accomplishment plan. This is not the whole thing. And then we each do an allocation. We get together and talk about that allocation based on a chair's proposal. This year, the chair's proposal was adopted by the entire council with no changes at all. Then in early December, we got the new budget forecast, and there were some errors in calculations from before. We had an additional $18 million, which we met on 5 days later and came up with a strategy to allocate additional funds to projects that had been approved but had not received their entire request. That was then passed unanimously, and it sits in front of you today, and I'm happy to answer any questions, but I'm delighted with the package. It's a great package.
Thank you, Mr. Hartwell, and I know that you didn't ask to be chair at this time. We lost one of our long-serving member, Mr. Anderson, and did a great job, and really publicly want to thank him for his service to the state and just his seriousness in which he took his role and so many things, but certainly this role as chair of Lessard Sams. And you've done a great job, and you know, we're really blessed that whole council with great citizen volunteers and really take it serious. I know the House members and Senates take it serious as well, but really the citizens, thank you for your service. And
thank you.
Oh, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hartle, thanks for coming to the committee. Welcome. Are you familiar with the 25-year plan, the goals of the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage?
I am, but I
Mr.
couldn't,
Hartwell.
I yep. couldn't quote it to you today.
Okay.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have, in the area of land acquisition, do you know what the goal is for how much land they had intended to acquire over the 25 years?
I don't know it off the top of my head, no.
Representative Green, I think what we're going to do is we're just going to let them kind of keep going with their presentation.
And I appreciate that, Mr. Chair, and I've only got one more question, but as I understand it, Mr. Hartle will be leaving, and that's why I thought
that's
I would
correct.
Ask him now.
Okay, go ahead,
so,
then.
Okay, I actually have Mr. Johnson's office working on this next question, but maybe you have the answer as the chairman of the committee. Do you know how much land has been acquired to date as far as what the, not only what the Lessard Sams has, but in the state in general, in the way of Lessard Sams and maybe even tax forfeited lands?
Mr. Hartwell.
Mr. Chair and Representative. I didn't bring my glasses, the note that I have in front of me is fee with PILT 58,000 acres and fee without PILT 34,000 for a total of 92,000 acres. Conservation easements 279,842 acres.
Representative Green.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hartwell. I thank you again for your dedication and service and all the citizens and members of the council. Have a safe trip wherever you're. I was really, Mr. Hartwell, I'd like to, in public, I'd like to offer or ask, put pressure on you myself, I guess. Maybe I could have our committee over there for a tour this spring of the Bellwin property in the West or East Metro to see some of the prairie restoration and some of the habitat projects they have going on. I don't know if you can nod if you want, if you'd be open to having 20 of us over there.
Mr. Chair, I would be happy to have 20 of you, or as you know, if there are only three at a time, I have a really special vehicle that I can give you a tour of the 1,500 acres and get you close to bison, closer than might be comfortable.
Thank you, Mr. Hartwell. Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, Mark Johnson, Executive Director for the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. Members, in your packets today, you have a bill overview, which was provided to you. There's also another Conservation Partners Legacy handout that we'll be going into shortly, as we have Kathy Varvel here with DNR, who's the coordinator for the CPL program, and she'll give you a quick overview of that. Very quickly, the bill overview, I won't go into it in depth. We did do that in the last committee we met in. But from a highlight standpoint, you know, there's $137.5 million in the bill. There's $83,000 that are anticipated for habitat protection, restoration, or enhancement. 101 miles of stream of shoreline, I should say, that will be enhanced, protected, or restored, and many other things. We have about 25 different organizations that are recipients of these recommended appropriations, and those are just two state agencies, 11 local units of government, which may be counties or cities generally, and also 12 NGOs. Most of these proposals have multiple partners in together with them in their for the projects or for the programs. And pardon me, but there are two separate terms here. We call them all programs because in each one there are multiple projects and multiple locations where things will happen. So it's very much a programmatic approach all the time. And that's part of why it takes so long for the council and why it's such a burdensome thing for them to go through to figure everything out in vetting these proposals as they come in. If any of the members would like afterwards, or in their offices or in our office, I would be happy to go through any of the details of any of the proposals within the bill or the handout as it is. And of course, after we're done presenting, we will certainly stand for any questions you would like. But to expedite or from a speed standpoint, sir, if you would like, we'll have Kathy Varvel come up and say, give us a quick overview of CPL. If that's all right, and then I'll have my assistant director, Joe Pavelko, come up and give you a few more highlights of some of the projects within the bill as well.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Ms. Fargo? So I think this, through discussions I had with Mr. Johnson and Representative Becker Finn, I thought it was important to talk about the grants program because I think it's one of the successes. I think people are familiar with often some of the bigger projects, maybe Trouts Unlimited or some of the Deer Hunters or TL, you know, the prairie restorations. But some of these smaller grant programs have proven to really be hugely successful in getting smaller groups money and then projects out. And volunteers, you get a big focus on local volunteers too, so which I always think is neat. So, Mr. Johnson, I guess.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, just one more comment before Ms. Varvel takes over. Within the bill itself, on page 20, so it'd be starting at 20.3, is where the Conservation Partners Legacy portion of the appropriations comes in, and it's about a $12 million portion of this package.
Ms. Varvel, thank you for coming, and thank you for the work you do.
Good afternoon, Chairman Lilly, members of the Legacy Finance Division. For the record, my name is Kathy Varvel, and I'm here representing the Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program, or CPL. CPL is a small grants program that funds habitat projects throughout the state, projects like stream, prairie, and forest restorations, enhancements, and acquisitions. We are in the middle of the 11th year of CPL, and I truly mean the middle. Just this morning, I had a meeting with one of our technical review committees for our second round of traditional and metro cycle projects this year. We're currently accepting applications for the fourth round of expedited conservation projects, or ECP grants. So far this year, there have been 82 funded projects. Across all 11 years, there have been 750 awarded projects. as you can see, CPL projects have made quite an impact across the state. 83 of Minnesota's 87 counties have had CPL projects in them. There have been over 280 different applicants and over 210 different awarded grantees. There continue to be new applicants to CPL every year, and we're trying to ensure that that trend continues. Our Metro program, which started in 2015, continues to be successful as well. You can see on the map on the right all of the projects in the 7-county metro, but there have also been several projects within the city limits of Rochester, Duluth, and St. Cloud, which are also part of our metro program. I'd like to show you some of the projects that have been awarded since 2009. Arcola Bluffs in Washington County was a partnership between the St. Croix River Association and the National Park Service. You can see the before photos on the top row and the after photos on the bottom row. The National Park Service and the St. Croix River Association were able to restore 165 acres along the St. Croix River by eradicating invasive species with fire and herbicide treatments and planting natives where needed. This partnership has a long-term management plan for the site and continue to burn and spray for invasives to maintain the restoration. The next project is Orwell WMA in Otter Tail County. Again, the before is on the top and the after is on the bottom. This prairie enhancement was a multi-phase project completed by Wildlife Forever in partnership with the DNR. As you can see from the photos on the top, red cedars really invaded the prairie over the years, and Wildlife Forever was able to enhance 900 acres of the WMA by removing a lot of trees and other woody vegetation, conducting burns, and seeding native prairie species. The last project was completed by the Delta Waterfowl Foundation on Agassiz National Wildlife Refuge in partnership with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Delta Waterfowl Foundation enhanced 6 wetland units and a total of 9,000 acres in the wildlife refuge. They were able to accomplish this through aerial spraying, burning, and disking. The cattails were knocked back to about a 50% cover on the wetlands. This combination of open water and vegetation provides great habitat for migrating waterfowl. I'd also like to highlight some of the work that the Tall Pine Toms, a small chapter of the National Wild Turkey Federation in North Central Minnesota, has been doing. The Tall Pine Toms was awarded 7 expedited conservation projects since 2015. Each of these projects has taken place on state or county land in the northern forest, and they've completed prescribed burns, planted native grasses, forbs, trees, and removed invasive species. The average size of their grants is about $25,000. There have been projects from cities and counties, soil and water conservation districts, watershed districts, regional, state, and national conservation organizations, and local chapters within those national conservation organizations. There are awards from $5,000, the minimum, up to $400,000, our maximum. Each time I open our online system to begin accepting more applications, it is truly exciting to see what projects are proposed and what applicants are working on throughout Minnesota. On behalf of all of the small conservation organizations throughout the state of Minnesota, thank you for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Barbell. Any questions for her? I just think this is really an amazing program. I think you added a couple million since when I was on there, so which is great. Any questions? Seeing none. Go ahead, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairwall, thank you, Ms. Barbell. Mr. Chairwall, Mr. Pavelko comes up, so he can give you some other highlights on some of the other projects. I just should mention that around the room today, for members' notice, there are many of the potential recipients or people who are current project managers and current project recipients or past appropriation recipients. Just looking around the room, I noticed that Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, Minnesota Waterfowl, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, TNC, Friends of Mississippi, I'm sure I'm missing, but there's a bunch of them here. And they're all open to answering questions on their projects as you wish them to come to your offices or whatever you might do. So they're very helpful, and they're very open about talking about the projects. Mr. Chair, with that, unless you have something else, I hand it to Mr. Pavelko.
Mr. Johnson, I don't know if we have a question. Representative Wagenius, did you have a? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you. Maybe one thing I think it's important to hear of the committees that you just mentioned too, Mr. Johnson, is just how many volunteers, you know, how it kind of compounds if there's, you know, monies that's matched or all the volunteer hours or sort of thing. Mr. Pavelko, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll try and keep it short and sweet just in case. Well, we all know that the Outdoor Heritage Fund is obviously your committee's favorite fund, but we do want to leave a little bit of time for the clean water folks. So I'm going to go through just a few of the projects that is in this package this year. One is the Heron Lake Area Conservation Partnership and the Heron Lake Watershed District actually proposed a project with OHF, and they are working with nonprofits, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, and they are actually providing meeting with landowners and providing them with a suite of options for enrolling in habitat programs. So the primary project that OHF will be funding is fee title, land acquisition, or easements, but they will also have a full-time employee in the watershed district office working with landowners. So if they, for some reason, the landowner doesn't like what this program is maybe offering and they want to work with the FSA or NRCS, they have that option. The second project is the Accelerating the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Habitat Conservation Easement Program, and this is actually a phase two program. If you look at the back of your handout, you'll see that a lot of the programs have multiple phases, and they all started with a first phase, and those are usually pilot programs, and so if they work and they're able to spend their money, then they usually come in for a second round, a third round, and so on. The council, we review all of the projects, how they're doing on their spending, if they're meeting their goals. So if for some reason a group came in and they weren't doing a very good job and they asked for money, we would relay to the council that they are not able to spend their money and you shouldn't give them more money. But most of the time they're doing a pretty good job. So again, this is a phase two, and they're actually working with private landowners to put U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service habitat easements on their properties. So it'll be perpetual conservation. The landowners are still able to hay and graze those properties, but at the same time, do it in a way that's beneficial for wildlife habitat. And then finally, the last project that we'll highlight is the Northern Forest Habitat Conservation Minnesota Land Trust in St. Louis County. That project, that's in St. Louis County. They're working with Potlatch to acquire approximately 4,500 acres of Potlatch lands. And that land will be acquired by a nonprofit, then it will be transferred to the county and become county lands, county forest lands for working lands. So they'll be, you know, generating revenue off of that while also doing it in the best way that's good for wildlife. And there are lots of other projects, obviously, with $135 million being spent. And if you have questions on specifics on projects, or you actually want to go out and look at projects, I know all of the project managers would love to have people come out and look at it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your work with the council. And then for members that are on the committee, and their offices are right on the tunnel, so if you're ever heading over to MnDOT to get a bite to eat, you could certainly pop your head in there and any question, and I know that they'd be open to trying to answer and try to navigate success for a project you might care about or even a concern that could be answered. Representative Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can someone share with me a little bit more about the Pig's Eye habitat restoration?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zhang, would you please repeat that for me? I'm sorry.
Pig's Eye Lake.
Big Eye.
Pig's Eye.
Oh, Pig's Eye. Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative. Pig's Eye Lake was actually in last year's bill. It was an appropriation in last year's bill. That's a one of the problems with Pig's Eye Lake, as was presented to us, as presented to the council, was that the lake is so open and it's extremely shallow, and because of that, plus because of the influx of or the extreme population of carp in there, there's a huge wind fetch that happens on a lake. That means that it gets very turbulent, and it just ends up being extremely silty, and the visibility of through the water is just not there because everything's turbulent all the time. Within that project, what they're trying to do is they're going to the Army Corps engineer is going to supply sand dredgings that they normally dredge, you know, out in the channels. They're going to bring that in, and they're going to actually produce islands that will help knock that wind fetch down. And those islands are strategically placed in the upper two-thirds or half of the lake, the northernmost portions of it. With that, they're providing terrestrial habitat for nesting migratory birds, especially shorebirds. Plus, they'll be, as I understand, there'll be planting of some extra native species to bring them back in to try to reintroduce them. But just simply that act of putting those barriers, those islands in, has been a really, as I understand, has been a really successful way of dropping the wind fetch in other places, on other bodies of water that are similar to this with a very shallow deal. So you end up with better terrestrial avian habitat as well as aquatic habitat.
Representative Zhang, any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So we're kind of getting towards the end. Any public comment regards to this bill at this time? Seeing none. Any more member questions at this time? Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just sort of popped into my head as you were talking about the islands. Does that mean in the shallow area like that there has to be a credit that's purchased or something for the loss of wetland?
Director Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Member Heinzman, I don't believe so in this case. And it's all the permitting is done through the Army Corps as well as the state and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So with those partners involved, I'm sure they're covering all their bases. To my understanding, there doesn't have to be any wetland credits purchased there because it's not leaving wetland. It's just putting some terrestrial components within it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heitzman.
Do you recall, and if you don't know, we can talk about this offline, but how many acres are we talking about with these islands?
Mr. Chair and Member Heinzman, I'm not sure. It's a very small amount, but I can get that information for you if you'd like.
Just Representative Heitzman. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious. Thank you.
That's, okay. Representative Zhang.
Actually, Mr. Chair, this question is for you. Remember you texted me a couple of weeks ago about getting the lower Phalen Creek folks on this? Are they part of this conversation too, or is that something else?
So a couple of days ago, I had Representative Zhang's referring to a project or an area in his area or district quite close to here that I had an opportunity to reach out to Mr. Johnson, and he offered the opportunity to just kind of do a walk around on TP property, you know, which is real close here. It's right underneath the 3rd Street Bridge, which Chair Murphy is very familiar with, and Representative Erdahl, I'm sure you probably all have cement pieces in your offices. Well, underneath there is a wonderful habitat area, and I mentioned it to Mr. Johnson, and he was open to walking in there and taking a look and see if maybe there's because there's a pond area in there, and I was thinking maybe we could, with the CPL grants again, that maybe it might be an opportunity to introduce some fish in there and clean it up. And so, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, very quickly, that reminds me that I really would be remiss if I didn't put in that our call for funding requests starts April 1. If any of the members have constituent groups in their districts who are interested in finding out more information or want to ask us questions, we are really happy to speak with them. So please send them our way.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, Representative Becker Finn, would you like to some comments on your bill? And then
absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am mindful of the time. I don't want to take any of the clean water time, but this is also my favorite legacy fund. So I just wanted to hit on the fact that our public lands belong to each and every Minnesotan, and each and every Minnesotan that pays their sales taxes part of this work that we're able to do. And so the great thing about that for me is that every Minnesotan can benefit from those public lands, even if they can never afford to buy a cabin up north. This is something that really, the whole point is that we all get to benefit from these. And to that, you know, we're the Outdoor Heritage Fund. We talk a lot about hunting and fishing, but I did want to point out that these projects and these public lands benefit all Minnesotans, even if you never leave your house. There are incredible benefits to these projects, whether you care about wildlife or you care about the management of our natural resources as far as the management of the species that we hunt. Whether you like to watch birds at your bird feeder, all those things are benefited by the habitat that we have, you know, whether it's working forests or clean water, when we have protected habitat that also impacts our water. And my favorite thing to make sure that folks have at the top of their minds as we talk about climate is that there is a carbon impact of our prairies. So it's not something that we always think of when we think of things we can do to address climate change, but the more prairies we have in those deep root systems, the better off we are as we deal with the climate crisis as well. So it's been really an honor to be on the Outdoor Heritage Council. And again, just want to give a shout out to the folks who serve on that council who are not legislators and are not used to being here in St. Paul all the time, because it really is a lot of time and effort that goes into these projects. And again, I would urge you, I don't want to slow up our ability to get these funds out to these projects that have been fully vetted. You know, the work only gets done if we get the money out there. You know, we didn't pay the sales tax so it could sit in an account and not do work for us. So look forward to moving this forward this year, and appreciate everybody listening and taking the time to learn more about the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the good things we do.
Thank you, Representative. And again, thank you to the citizens, like you mentioned, that volunteer on this. I think you've been good stewards. You do have an amazing team there, Mr. Johnson, the rest of you, and Ms. Smith back there. I know you do a ton of work as well as Joe, and thank you. You know, I just want to, before we get to the vote or to moving on, I just want to say that there really wasn't, you know, in my tenure serving on it, I was, you know, there weren't really men, you know, people that made mistakes, or they were good stewards. And if they did make mistakes, we didn't necessarily give them money again. So it's people get that and they take it very serious. And a lot of good volunteers are out there doing work. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And along the line of mistakes, I mean, so some folks might wonder what I'm doing getting a statute book out and looking at it.
Maybe you're looking for one of your books in there.
No. some years back when I chaired the committee, there was a, the mistakes get made that I had to then deal with on the floor. And one had to do with the change in the open meeting law from administrative to legislative. And so I was just double checking here to make sure that the open meeting law was under the administration part, so that you wouldn't have trouble with that on the House floor like I did. So it's all good.
Thank you for doing your homework there, sir. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 3128 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn and Mr. Johnson and your team. And again, thank you to the people in the audience that are good stewards of Minnesota money. I really do agree with what Representative Finn said there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Gardner, do you want to? And Mr. Jewell, do you want to come up and tell us the water story? As they're coming up, I just want to mention one more time that they really are right down the hall here. And if you ever have any questions on these funds, it's really on us to reach in there and to ask questions if you have them. Mr. Thank you very much for coming. Mr. Jewell, are we starting with you?
Yes.
So another one-third of our funds go into clean water, so we're going to hear from you folks today that there's a water council that's set up, and they've also been meeting and meeting and meeting. You can tell us about how many and looking after the funds. You're funded for the biennium usually, and traditionally, and so a lot of their funds were received last cycle. But Mr. Jewell, thank you for coming down. I hope you were up in Duluth voting for Chair Murphy yesterday, or no. Mr. Jewell.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair Lilly and members. I also want to thank two of your members who have served on the Clean Water Council, Representative Wagenius for 2 years prior to this, and recently Representative Heintzman. We gain a lot from our interactions with and the feedback we receive from the House and the Senate members who are part of it, and more broadly, other members. Our council is made up of a group of citizen members with two members of the House and two members of the Senate who are non-voting, and then we also have members from the agencies who are also non-voting but give us additional advice as to items that are of importance. Last year, the council, in collaboration with others, decided to hire an administrator. Prior to that, we had had staff, but they didn't have some of the abilities that we saw as really important, one of them being reaching out to legislators. Paul Gardner is that new administrator and has really helped in our outreach to the House and Senate, where he was once a House member. I think the important pieces that we want to talk about is give you a sense of what the work we're doing, our process for moving forward with our recommendations to you next year, and to tell you that we have been really working on a strategic plan that will produce what we want money to start flowing toward, and measurable outcomes that we can have that will actually show what we're getting done. There are many views about what it would be best for us to do, and there are more than 72 programs that get funded through the Clean Water Council. Those all have importance, and Paul is going to kind of walk you through more of what that looks like. So I'll hand it over to Paul.
Mr. Gardner.
Thank you.
Welcome back, and congratulations on your new job. Or I suppose it's been over a year now, maybe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's 13 months. And I've noticed since the last time I served here that you've changed all the locks. My keys don't work anymore. Thanks a lot. Okay. for the record, my name is Paul Gardner. I'm the administrator for the Clean Water Council. As you heard from Commissioner Jewell, we have 17 voting members that by statute are from particular constituencies. We also have 11 non-voting members, including agencies such as the PCA, Bowser, DNR, Department of Health, Department of Agriculture, the Metropolitan Council, as well as four legislators in the University of Minnesota, and we also work with the Public Facilities Authority. Every 2 years, we recommend how to spend the Clean Water Fund, so we thought that in a non-budget year that it would be a good time without the deadlines looming to just fill you in, because one thing we heard loud and clear from people at the Capitol, as well as other stakeholders outside state government, is they weren't always quite sure how all the line items in the legacy bill fit together into something that actually gets us towards measurable outcomes in drinking water and fishable and swimmable water. So we'd like to rectify that. We've been doing some other things, and so we'd like to share that with you today. The main problem we're trying to solve has to do with non-point source pollution. We are supposed to advise on the implementation of the Clean Water Legacy Act, which has to do with impairments in our water impairments is our way of saying water pollution in some ways, but they're 85% of them come from non-point sources. Simply put, those are small amounts of pollutants that, when accumulated over the size of a watershed, accumulate into a big problem and keep our waters from being fishable, swimmable, and drinkable. The big three contaminants we're concerned about are sediment, nitrogen, and phosphorus. These contaminants come not only from rural parts of the state, but urban and suburban communities as well. E. coli and coliform are two examples of bacteria that we're concerned about that can certainly cause problems with waters not being drinkable or swimmable, and they often come from sources like failing septic systems and uncontained livestock. Here in the metro area, one of our major contaminants of concern is chloride, mostly from de-icers, although it does come from some other sources as well. We have a very fancy chart and system and a work research paper that was done years ago saying how we will clean up the water and get out our pollutants. However, I find that most of that tends to make people's eyes glaze over. And so I'll try and use plain language as much as I can in this slide. So the way in which the state approaches cleaning water and getting at those impairments is to first test the water to see if there's something wrong with it, then figure out what the source of that problem may be, come up with a plan for how to solve that impairment and get rid of it. If necessary, train people to have the capacity to be able to fix the problem. If landowners are needed as people who can reduce non-point source pollution, the state and its local partners, particularly soil and water conservation districts, work with landowners to figure out what they need to do to act to make things better. In some cases, a protection strategy is appropriate, and that can mean setting aside land instead of farming it, putting it in a conservation program as an example. And then the fun stuff is always the restoration. That's where you take something that was eroding or a stream that was turned into a ditch and turn it back into a stream again. Moving dirt is the phrase that people often use to describe what we do there. We have an example there with a lakeshore restoration in the picture. And then after that, the MPCA works not just with state employees, but several 1,300, 1,400 volunteers who actually test water quality on an annual basis in lakes and streams. I think we have to be out of here at 2:15, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
So I timed it at 16 minutes. I hope that's all right. And then we can do questions. Okay. I consolidated a few things here. So in addition to all
Mr.
the...
Mr. Gardner, we have a question. Representative McGuinness, like...
Mr. Chair, I just was wondering if we're going to have time for questions or not.
Mr. Gardner, please.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was informed 15 minutes to talk and 15 minutes for questions, so...
But I think
we can do it during or after
at,
or...
At quarter after.
So there won't be time for questions?
No, I think he's going to present for another 10 minutes and then or another few minutes and then, right, we'll have time for questions?
I will shorten it up, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Gardner.
In terms of planning to how to deal with the impairments, the PCA sums everything up in something called a watershed restoration and protection strategy, or a RAPS. This is the report that lists the activities that have to take place to get rid of the impairments. And currently 49 out of 80 watersheds, the 80 major watersheds in the state, have that plan, that RAPS, and it lists all the activities needed to get the impairment off and hit water quality goals. This map will be filled in by 2023 as a result of funding in the next biennium. On the right, then, Bowser works with local stakeholders, such as soil and water conservation districts, to actually prioritize what is in those watershed restoration and protection strategies to figure out what would get funded first. And so that is how we avoid having random acts of conservation in the Clean Water Fund, is to focus efforts on things that are in an approved plan. That map of One Watershed, One Plan will be filled in by 2025. What I find especially helpful in these watershed plans is there are specific targets that need to be met to get waters to meet water quality goals and to have the impairment removed. So on the left of this summary table, this very boring looking spreadsheet with the Root River and the Upper Iowa, this is just a summary table that sums up many other pages of specific strategies. And it says if you do these four types of things at the scale indicated in parentheses, by a certain year indicated on the right, you would get according to their calculations, the water quality, you'd hit the water quality goal and reduce the amount of nutrients in the water. Fortunately, they also estimate what it would cost to do all these things. So by 2025, every watershed in the state will have something like this, so we will know what it will cost to get rid of all the impairments in the state. And we recognize that most of those are not going to be finished by 2034, but we have a foundation on which to build for the future. The fun stuff is the restoration and implementation. They include things like removing barriers for fish and for free-flowing waters, removing or moving culvert pipes, getting rid of dams, increasing soil health on farms by increasing the infiltration capacity of soil. There's septic inspection and replacement is a big part of it as well. On the drinking water side of things, we have a constitutional requirement that 5% of the Clean Water Fund must be used exclusively for drinking water. We breeze past that number quite easily, but we found that there are a lot of projects that we fund that have an indirect or direct impact on drinking water, either groundwater or surface water. In Minnesota, there are 920 community water systems that use groundwater. 500 of them are particularly susceptible to contaminants getting in the well. The Department of Health, using clean water funds by the end of this year, I believe, will have all 500 systems with a drinking water source protection plan. They essentially have a zone around the wellhead and identify all the potential threats and list the things that need to be done to protect that wellhead in perpetuity. The rest of them will be finished by 2025. And then we established a goal in our strategic planning process. I forgot to mention our what I hope will be an award-winning strategic plan in your packet. I'm kidding. Lists one big goal that we agreed with all stakeholders was possible, and that is to protect 400,000 acres around those 920 community water systems. And protect is not necessarily setting land aside. It can, in the case of drinking water, it can just make sure that we don't have stuff getting into the water. We have also committed in our new strategic plan, completed Monday, that we can provide financial assistance from the Clean Water Fund to actually do the stuff that's in those plans at 50%. By 2034. That would be substantial. On the surface water side of things, there are 23 surface water systems in the state, including the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul and the suburbs that rely on their Mississippi River water. There is a surface water assessment that already sizes up the risk to those systems. Those will be revised by 2025 with Clean Water Fund, and then there will be surface water intake protection plans by 2027, which are similar to what's being done with wellhead protection. Key to our efforts with the Clean Water Fund is to get at those leaking septic systems. The numbers are pretty daunting in how many there are in the state. Every year, a new generation of septic systems fail. So we'll never get to 100% compliance because as you inspect, you find ones that are failing. Because of the Clean Water Fund, we've been able to help counties enhance inspection, resulting in a minimum of 80% compliance. And we think we can get to 90% in the plan by 2034. Private wells have been a vexing issue. In the last year, the health department has worked on trying to help well owners figure out how to not only decide to test their well, which not everybody does, and then figure out what they need to do to get safe water if they have a synthetic or a natural substance that's in their well. We have this custom or tradition that your well is your responsibility. Sometimes what's in the well is not your fault or it's naturally occurring. And so getting people to test water is a real challenge. Surveys by the Department of Health shows that people with lower incomes are less likely to get their water tested or to figure out what to do to mitigate the risk. So there is an RFP out right now that the health department has seeking ways to do a pilot program to help people test wells. In western Minnesota, you see the blue. And the White Earth Nation, that is where arsenic is prevalent. The green in southeastern Minnesota is karst geology that is susceptible to nitrate contamination. So we're trying to figure out what buttons to push with people to get them to test and mitigate their water, and if they need help doing that. And that's a substantial change from what we've been doing. In terms of the results, our presentation coincides with the release of the Clean Water Fund Performance Report. Put together by the agencies. You have the thick report is in your packet there, I think, that has lots of indicators of how we're doing. The Clean Water Council fair to say we nagged the agencies to include some different information that is maybe more accessible to the general public, and they've done a nice job. The goal that we've been trying to reach with our current land use and practices for fishable waters is to have two-thirds of our waters be fishable. We're at 61% right now, so we're not terribly far off. The goal for swimmable waters is to hit 70% of our lakes that meet a recreational use standard. We're at 64%. So that just gives you an idea of the context in which we're trying to fix those impairments. I'm going to skip a couple of these and just mention that we are encouraged in statute to leverage non-state funding. So for every dollar in clean water funds, 95 cents are come from other sources. That does not include a little bit of federal money. It includes a lot of federal money. But it also doesn't include all of the countless volunteer hours that are priceless, frankly, that volunteers contribute to monitoring every year. So I have a couple of examples where base funding from the Clean Water Fund helped attract other state money, particularly capital investment, and then federal money as well, and landowner contributions. I'll just quickly say here on spending trends, every new dollar is pretty much going to drinking water and implementation. So the moving of dirt, protection of drinking water sources, rather than into more monitoring or research or planning. Those last three categories are holding steady. And then half the money from the Clean Water Fund leaves the state. It goes, money goes in the legacy bill to agencies, but then they often give it as competitive grants to other entities, including soil and water conservation districts. And of the half that goes to non-agency partners, 87% of that goes for drinking water and projects. I just wanted to end with this one picture of Rice Creek Watershed District. Rice Creek remeandered this section of stream that was a stream 100 years ago. It became a ditch, and over the last 5 years, they have remeandered it here in Shoreview and Arden Hills. I live in Shoreview, and my family uses our homemade redwood canoe that my wife's family made 30 years ago to use in the Boundary Waters. Just a note, don't use a homemade redwood canoe in the Boundary Waters. It weighs about 80 pounds. But it's great for Rice Creek. And so my family has been down this section many times. When I took the job, I started looking to see what was paid for by clean water funds in my area, and I found out that this was one of them. flash forward to a year ago, I asked my son, who was a senior in high school, what he would like to do with me before he went off to college and in the world, a father-son activity. And I thought he would say, let's take an expensive trip somewhere that you pay for and that I enjoy. And he did not. He said, let's paddle together down Rice Creek. This is what the Legacy Fund means to me. This is why the Clean Water Fund is my favorite part of the Legacy thing. And I hope it will be yours in time. If you would like to find out how the Legacy Fund has affected your community, please let me know and we'll do some digging and get you some information. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner, Mr. Jewell. Representative Wiginius.
Some questions, Mr. Chair. Yep. First, I just want to tell you, I do the climate. And
Representative Wiginius, could.
Sure.
Sorry.
I do the climate and energy committee, and about a week ago, we had a hearing on the impact of climate change on our waters. And one of the things we talked about was the impact of climate change on drinking water. So the testimony, to set up for that testimony, we know that USGS is finding very high levels of water in the southern third of the state. And so there's pretty much consensus agreement that the potential for flooding is real this year. And I don't think anybody disagrees with that. So when we talked about drinking water, I asked the question about the capacity. If there's flooding in southern Minnesota, we've had it before, what's the capacity for testing private wells? And apparently, we don't have the capacity.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, I listened to the entire testimony for your hearing the other day on audio from my office. And the issue is daunting because the more volume of water is, the more you have to change the mathematical models on which all of these watershed plans are based. And so more rain means the hill we have to climb gets higher. And so that does keep me awake at night. In terms of the capacity to test, I have heard a couple of things, and then otherwise I'd have to phone a friend from the health department here. But I have heard from some folks in greater Minnesota that there isn't enough, there aren't enough labs to test certain types of things. There's some things you could do on site. We've had good conversations with Mr. Broberg at the Well Owners Association on how to do clinics and how to help people get tested. But in terms of how to prioritize areas that might be flood-prone this spring, I'd have to punt on a specific answer to the health department who's here.
Representative Guinness.
I think punting is not in order right now.
Very good.
So we have to figure out, well, why don't we have the capacity? We've spent $1 billion. I mean, part of it can be public capacity, part of it can be private capacity. But we don't have the private capacity because folks who tested wells in Alexandria, Minnesota, where I used to have my wells tested, or the lab, went out of business because there weren't enough people asking to have their labs, I mean, their water tested, because there was no push by the state to have the water tested. So that's a problem. So let's just put the problem on the table. The second problem is that we don't have a method of reaching people whose wells might be polluted this spring, and to tell them. And then we don't, what do we tell them? Do we have a protocol for what we tell them? So those are the big problems there. I mean, I see that we have 4 minutes and I had 5 questions, so. Let me just.
Representative Wagenius, I would hope that Mr. Jewell or Mr. Gardner would be more than willing, I would hope, to come back and we can. I'd hate to limit the discussion, so please just. We'll finish out the clock today and we'll have them back and we can visit more. So take your time, and there's others that have questions. Representative Murphy has questions, Representative Vertel has questions. So.
Maybe I can just put my questions on the table so you're ready when you come back. My next question would be about, you're talking about surface water health, but you don't test surface water for drinking water contaminants. So we don't know whether the surface water is healthy. So I say that because my constituents, at least in Minneapolis, and I'll be St. Paul too, drink surface water along with, and you did say there are 25 utilities in the state that use surface water for drinking water. We have no protocols for testing those surface waters to see what's in this them. And it just threw me at the beginning when you said there are only 3 big contaminants of concern that you had. And that was, you know, phosphorus and nitrate and what else was it? Whatever. Because that's not what I'm worried about for my drinking water, and that's not what I'm worried about for my constituents. So Nick, you all can talk about this later. This was on your website, this neonics in surface water. Nothing in this talks about neonics and surface water. And you talk about 3 of them are in several state rivers and streams approach or exceed limits for these pesticides. And this is all about pollinators. And of course, we should be worried about pollinators. But what about people who drink the water? So that will be another question. What about issues that I can't see in your report that are real problems for our drinking water, Minneapolis and St. Paul, then PFOSs. You don't have standards for PFOS at this late date. And NDMA, you don't have standards for that. So all through here I see that water needs to be fishable and swimmable, but we've dropped the word drinkable. And that doesn't work for those of us who actually drink the water. So then the last thing I'll put on the table, we talk about drinking water here, and by 2027, you will have plans for source water intake. 20 years after you spent $1 billion over that in Clean Water Fund, and now we're going to wait till 2027 to have plans for drinking water? That's not acceptable. No way is that acceptable. So we'll hear. I know other people have questions. Those are mine.
So,
Mr. Jewell, and
just want to say one thing, because I do think the issue of drinking water from private wells, but also the drinking water for all Minnesotans, is high on our priority list. It's been a major part of our conversation as a committee for the last several years, in part driven by Representative Wagenius's questions of us. So I think it would be helpful. Our meeting on Monday specifically was focused on drinking water. And one of the issues is, what do we do related to assuring that private wells are tested and that people have the money to do something if they find out that that water has problems?
Thank you. We've kind of met our time, and I just would like to affirm you're open to coming back, I hope, to have further discussion. And my apologies to Representative Murphy. I know you had a question, and Representative Erdahl as well had a question, and had to step out for another meeting, I'm certain. With that, Representative Murphy.
Could I just ask my question?
Yes.
The report card, was the report card done by the same people that did the performance report?
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that's correct.
So
Representative Murphy.
It's not really a report card, it's kind of a summary of the report.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Gardner.
That's correct.
Thank you all for a good meeting. Thank you, water folks, for coming today, and we'll invite you back again to further conversation. Thank you for all those in the crowd today that were part of Lasard Sam's and concerned about the water of Minnesota as well. So with that, we are adjourned.